Welcome back to Purposeful Investments, the podcast brought to you by Pension Insurance Corporation, otherwise known as PIC, a specialist insurer of defined benefit pension schemes, taking a look at the powerful financial, regulatory, and cultural issues which form the relationship between finance and society. I'm Emma Nelson, and this series is all about finance with a social purpose, how the pensions we save for not only give us a secure financial future, but also positively help the environment, the economy, and future generations. This series looks at ESG, or environmental, social, and governance investing, an evolving framework which is meant to help investors judge the long-term sustainability and the social impact of their investments. In today's programme, we'll be looking at social housing. The roofs over the heads of some 5 million people in the UK are provided by social housing, and we explore the decisions taken to ensure that billions of pounds of investment reach this sector, but also the lived experience of the residents. Here's a taster of the voices coming up in this extended episode looking at ESG and social housing.
For me, it was about, well, who makes decisions about where I live and how that money's invested when I live here and I know what I want to see. I know what's needed. I know if we need communal doors. I know if we need more open spaces. So I really wanted to get to grips with that.
So we have been active investors in the social housing space since 2012. We've got something like 2 billion of social housing investments on the portfolio, and I'd say we view ESG as a key component in the analysis of each of our individual investments.
Pension funds and insurance companies are being told to do something about climate change, and that's forcing them to think about the other dimensions and the other measures that are important when looking at their investments. And I think the more that social housing investments, government investments, it's like the way that we have our council tax, this is what it's being spent on.
First, I heard from Sarah Foster. She's CEO and co-founder of the social advisory firm The Good Economy, to find out how to create standards for the financial sector to measure ESG in this particular area when it's all so new.
We've seen in our work, you know, over the last year, a real rise in interest in the sort of sustainable development agenda and ESG. And I think with more meaning, if you like, I mean, people are now looking at ESG integration in order to drive investments that ultimately would deliver sort of environmental, social. And certainly the work that we've been doing on developing ESG standards for lenders and investors in social housing, I think is a good example where ESG is being taken very seriously by the financial sector.
Tell us how you go about formulating these standards.
So the project to develop sector standards for ESG reporting in social housing really started a year ago when it was clear that lenders and investors, even traditional bank lenders into the sector, were asking housing associations for information on their ESG performance. And that was resulting actually in ESG questionnaires being sent to finance directors, often asking for information that was relevant to sort of large listed corporates, but not relevant to housing providers. So a decision was made to bring together a group of housing providers led by Peabody, together with a group of financial institutions, to develop a set of standards that were relevant and consistent and credible for the sector. We went through sort of environmental, social, and governance domains and have come up with 12 themes and sort of 48 criteria, which are of importance to the strategies of organisations. So, say, on environment, a massive challenge for the social housing sector is meeting the net zero targets. We have a lot of old housing stock. So the criteria ask, you know, to what extent does a housing provider have an environmental strategy? What is it going to be doing on energy efficiency, on, you know, resource management? On the social criteria, a key challenge for Britain is the affordability of housing, the fact that we've got, you know, nearly 8 million people in housing need. So the criteria really trying to understand how affordable are the rents of the housing providers, to what extent are these building safety measures being put in place, to what extent is resident voice being listened to. So, you know, we've ultimately come up with, I think, a set of ESG criteria that are consistent, transparent, comparable, that allows the social housing sector to really tell its story in terms of ESG performance.
How do you make all three elements work, however? Because you mentioned the idea of having your housing stock being carbon neutral. But in order to build fresh carbon neutral housing stock, that often involves the tearing down of the current stock, which is actually people's homes.
Absolutely. And, you know, that is something we're very aware of, that sometimes there are tensions between, say, environmental, social, in the way you've described. So actually, I mean, you know, to that specific question, in Bath, where we live, you know, 2 years ago, there was a move to tear down an old post-war estate because, you know, the quality of the homes is very, very poor. They're not environmentally efficient. And the aim of the housing associations was to rebuild new homes and rehouse people. It led to a huge uproar by the local community because people lived in these homes for decades and didn't want to move. For them, you know, the quality of their homes was fine. And, you know, in the end, you know, there was a compromise. Some of the very old flats were destroyed and are being rebuilt, but some of the individual homes have remained. But I think, you know, that is something very much housing providers have to, you know, have to manage. And how do they, you know, achieve both environmental standards and the sort of community benefits of housing? You know, these are very real. And that's why I think, you know, ESG management, it's dynamic, right? This isn't a tick box of reporting metrics. This is actually about strategy and how you deliver on performance against these criteria. What we need is investors who absolutely, you know, have a shared purpose, you know, really, I would say, an impact objective of increasing the supply of quality, sustainable, affordable housing, and that their financing is absolutely aligned with delivering on that.
Let's look now in depth at social housing, housing associations, and how they're all financed to begin with. To delve into this world and the role which investment through debt or other means plays, the work of these people who make it happen, and the outcomes for residents, the people at the sharp end of the housing crisis, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Alan Twining. He's head of debt origination at Pension Insurance Corporation. Sally Bridgeland is the former CEO of BP's pension scheme. She's a non-executive director of a number of financial institutions with assets of more than £100 billion. And Will Perry, director of strategy at the Regulator of Social Housing. He works on setting standards for social housing when it comes to funding and management. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Let's begin with the funding aspect. Alan, if I can come to you on this one. Lots of people think about how social housing works, but not very often about how it's funded.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the focus for PIC and Pension Insurance Corporation is on sourcing high quality, long dated assets. So this will be debt backed by good organisations with a high quality portfolio, you know, for which we can essentially pay our pensioners. And so the social housing sector and the way they are funded really fits very neatly into that. And I think, you know, the way we think about these things, we're not new to the sector. First investment was in 2012. You know, we really do look at it as a partnership with these organisations and a long-term way of helping fund their assets as well as paying our pensioners.
Sally, having managed so many of these pension schemes with the long-term investment absolutely front and centre, when did social housing become what many people see as the darling of the institutional investor?
I think it's been increasingly happening over the last decade. Obviously, the institutional checkbook to be able to help make the development is really important, but also the purpose of most of these institutions is to help improve the retirement situation for a lot of individuals in the UK. And you can't ignore the fact that they'll need somewhere to live in that retirement. So the interests are very much aligned as long as there's the right level of financial return. And that's the main challenge and the things that institutional investors have to think about.
So staying with you, Sally, on that one, that could suggest that occasionally the view of corporates and social housing tenants and managers could appear to be on opposite ends.
Yeah, I think, and a lot of work has been done with the Social Impact Investing Task Force over the last few years in helping reinforce this idea of there being a spectrum of capital. So those where you're just thinking about the risks and the returns in a pure financial sense, and through to philanthropy at the other end. And the increasing recognition is that you don't have to be pure capitalism, just thinking about the money, but there are a variety of steps along the way where you're avoiding risk and benefiting society generally without having to compromise on those returns. And that's the thing, that's the space where institutional investors are most interested at the moment, from PIC to pension funds to insurance companies like Royal London and the Local Pensions Partnership, where I'm involved as a non-executive.
Well, what's your view on this? Because, you know, in theory, when you think about it, social housing ticks all the boxes. It can be sustainable. It does social good. It can be well governed. It provides pensions for lots of people in the future. But is there ever that disparity between what the investor wants and believes and what the investee believes? I mean, how do they communicate?
I think that tension can definitely there at times. And the challenge with social housing is that the level of return which can be generated from the assets is necessarily limited because there are restrictions around what rent can be charged. What's historically happened is that there has been a good match between the kind of risk profile of housing associations and the level of debt interest that can be sustained from the rental income. And that has worked very well. There's been private finance in the sector for over 30 years. There's over 100 billion of debt finance outstanding at the moment. So it works on a certain level. Where problems perhaps occur is when you start stretching those return expectations beyond what is sustainable from the assets. And what tends to happen in those situations, it's the assets and thus the people who live in them who bear the consequences of that. So if you try and take too much out, then that has knock-on effects for the social benefit that can be generated. And I think there's a question there about what the view is of investors of these assets. Yes, they're a real estate asset, but they are also a particular category there. They have restrictions on them which limit how much return you could generate from them. Equally, the risk profile is different from a conventional real estate asset because you have much closer ties to government in terms of support from benefit. You have very high demand due to the housing shortage that there is in this country and the high cost of rents more generally. So it's a bit safer and the risk profile and return should match.
Sally?
I think one thing that's really important is that investors are increasingly looking for more from their investments. Pension funds and insurance companies are being told to do something about climate change, and that's forcing them to think about the other dimensions and the other measures that are important when looking at their investments.
Alan, as an investor, how do you, or an asset owner, how do you measure this impact and decide whether a project is worth going for?
So I think PIC's perspective is that we definitely recognise the social benefit of some of these things, but our priority really is about looking after our pensioners and making sure their futures are secured through long-term stable cash flows. And that, for me, is highly compatible with the idea of thinking about things on a sustainable, well-governed, you know, environmentally sound basis. That, you know, what makes a good credit investment can often overlap very heavily with what makes a good ESG investment. And that's how we approach things. And I think to the point about the returns we're targeting, I mean, I'll just pick up that, you know, we are fixed income investors. Other alternatives include government bonds, which are at record low yields. So whilst the absolute returns that a portfolio of social housing or a social housing organisation can generate are quite low, relative to what we would need to receive on government bonds, you know, they are extremely attractive. And especially when we start talking about, you know, the risk-adjusted returns on a sector that is well regulated, it is stable, and by and large, the funding solution, you know, is fairly simple. We lend long-term, straightforward covenant packages, and it works really, really well for matching our long-dated liabilities.
I think Alan makes a very good point there about the nature of the investment and what is being funded, that the ESG benefit is kind of intrinsic to the product. It doesn't do anything else. It does housing associations provide low-cost accommodation to people who need it. So that social impact is inherently there. And perhaps that's a story that needs to be told better. Similarly, the governance aspect of it, housing associations and mutuals, you've got really strong inherent governance there. And the environmental side is working through quite extensively over the next few decades. You know, as we move towards greater carbon efficiency, there is going to be a strong environmental benefit to these investments. It's about thinking about how that is presented so that investors understand it. And maybe some things that housing associations just think, this is us, we don't need to explain this, come across to people who maybe haven't looked at the sector particularly hard in the past.
Let's move on to the issue of responsibility and accountability. And Sally, tell us about not just measuring impact, but just making sure that what you ask to be done is done.
Yeah, I think having a framework is really important. So that includes the S side of things, which are about things like how the staff are trained and the investment in training there, and how the residents have a voice. Those two things, being measured, being articulated, being reported back, is actually really important in thinking about actually, are these having the benefits that you wanted them to? And my sense is that the retirement or the elderly housing area is, particularly in the wake of the care home issues and the crisis, is something where that kind of investment and voice is just as important as some of the other governance issues and needs to be balanced. So finding a way to measure that and bring that forward.
Will, at what point do you have to step in here, or do things just generally tick along quite well?
And our interest as regulator is primarily in the quality of the organisation and the organisation's governance and how well they are running the business. Our role in the consumer area is quite limited, but we do have an expectation that providers will think of their tenants and how they need to meet their needs. And some of the cases where we have had the most issues to resolve have been where that tenant and landlord relationship has broken down, where there have been failings in, for example, large repair contracts, where tenants weren't getting the service that they should have had. Larger organisations can be very well governed and understand their tenants extremely well, but they are going to be different creatures from a small, locally community-based type of organisation. And there'll be a different investment proposition as a result. What we expect is that the governance of the organisation matches the kind of risk profile and type of activities which are being undertaken. So if you're a big developing organisation, we would expect you to have people on the board who can deal with large capital works programmes in a way that we wouldn't in a small local organisation.
And Alan, when you decide to embark on these long-term relationships with these associations, because everybody wants to stay here for a long time together, how do you make sure that everybody knows exactly what they are responsible for and rests accountable?
I think in terms of how we approach and make an investment decision, like the due diligence that we do at the outset, you can call it credit analysis, you can call it ESG analysis, it is very key to meet and fully understand, I guess, what the management is thinking about their organisation, how well they're performing. We have detailed questions about the treatment of tenants, and we assess the whole package in terms of how well the organisation is run, how financially viable, or how well it could deal with any shocks or unexpected events. And, these are all the factors that kind of dip into will support an investment decision in this sector. And then, really, once we're there as well, once we are, say, put in a position, we've lent money, we will have regular dialogue with these housing associations, update on what they're doing. If there are particular incidents that come up or themes that come through, we will ask them and ensure that they are doing things to the degree we can to right those wrongs. Because the way we'd think about it, as an organisation, we're very heavily incentivised to help them maintain their credit quality and communicate to them what's important to us. And as I think we've touched on, this is a sector that needs ongoing funding. So even though you may have invested initially and you could say, well, what can you do at that point? You've already invested the money. These issuers or borrowers will come back to the sector time and time again. So maintaining a good relationship with their lenders or their investors is absolutely key for their long-term viability.
Alan Twining, Head of Debt Origination at Pension Insurance Corporation, Sally Bridgeland, Will Perry, thank you all for joining me. And a quick reminder that you can find out more about this series by going to pensioncorporation.com and looking into the Thought Leadership section. So far, we've heard the perspectives of those investing in and regulating social housing. And as Will Perry said, it's all, in the end, about the people who live in the places. What is their lived experience of their connection to the funding for their homes? To find out, we put the microphone in front of two residents of Phoenix Housing, a housing association based in South London, to which PIC lent £60 million in 2018 to help with the development of 200 new homes.
So I'm Carmen Simpson and I'm currently a resident of Phoenix. My current involvement with Phoenix is that I'm a member of the board. I chair our repairs committee, looking at all our repairs and voids and just ensuring that all of that is working well.
So my name's Simon Barlow. I'm a Phoenix tenant, resident, part of the Phoenix community. Latterly, I've been involved with the board. I was elected a year ago. And really now I'm trying to understand through that how we can shape the community and support the organisation to grow and develop.
So for all my involvement with Phoenix and looking at our money came from and works that was done on my estate, because I live on North Downham, and that's considered to be one of the most deprived areas within the borough. And our stock is very old and needs a lot of investment. So for me, it was about, well, who makes decisions about where I live and how that money is invested when I live here? And I know what I want to see. I know what's needed. I know if we need communal doors. I know if we need more open spaces. So I really wanted to get to grips with that.
Yeah, I think when I first moved in, Phoenix was about halfway through the investment programme. My understanding from speaking to some residents was that a lot of the properties when they were under Lewisham hadn't been invested in or kept up to date. And some people were talking about they still had gas lamps and things like that. I know my property didn't have gas central heating, such things. It was all electric. So it was very exciting that, you know, suddenly this money and investment came in. I think Phoenix needed to get that money to have that capital funding up front initially to invest and get us up to a decent homes and a Phoenix standard. For me, there's always a connection, because when I look at the end of my road, I can see Canary Wharf in the distance, and the city obviously is a little way beyond, but there is that connection between us in our community and those people at Canary Wharf who make those decisions, and that money filters down to us. But it's very important that we always remember it's about the community and investing in that as well as our properties to improve the aspirations of people in our area.
I actually don't see people in pinstripe suits walking around the North Downham estate or the Phoenix community housing area in general. So for me, my interest is we live here, we're the residents, we know exactly what we want to see, we know where this investment should go to. This is why I like the fact that we're now a community gateway organisation. Residents lead, residents are at the forefront, residents work with the exec to make the decisions that impact us, the residents of this organisation where we live.
We also have a significant portfolio of looking to build and improve the quality of our housing stock. So I know that the money that we got from the PIC was also to fund a lot of new housing. So as well as investing in existing stock to get that up to date, we've also started building some really exciting developments and looking at things like shared age space. I can't remember what the proper term is, but by that I mean different generations living together and how that might impact people, which would be about benefiting different age groups and giving people who are older more connection to their community and things like that. So I think that's really important that money is allowing us to be really novel in what we're doing.
Let's now hear from a leader of a housing association. He's Niall Istefan, CEO of Eildon Housing Association, which is a market leader in social housing in Scotland. They provide thousands of high-quality and affordable rented homes for tenants, as well as giving specialised care and sheltered housing as well. Niall, just explain to us how your housing association works.
Yeah, thanks. So we've been around in the Scottish Borders since 1973, and we've just gradually grown in our size and our range since we've existed. We're able to borrow from either traditional lenders or the private placement market to match government grant in order to provide sustainable, high-quality, affordable homes in perpetuity. And we also provide care and support services to the many tenants who require that. During the pandemic, we've had some very vulnerable older people who've had to be shielded and they've stayed at home in their flats. So we've been able to provide support to them from just a social call to the provision of food and medical supplies to keep them going while they've had to be isolated in their own homes. And we've done that through our own staff group and also through working in partnership with community resilience groups within the communities across the Scottish Borders that we operate in.
Now, one thing that people often don't necessarily join the dots with is the relationship between social housing and investors. what's yours like? I mean, who do you go to? Do people come to you? Just explain your setup and how dependent you are on them.
Yeah, no, very dependent. And the relationships are absolutely crucial for us. So when we get into a relationship with an investor, we make sure that we are entirely transparent and they understand our business model and what we're seeking to do with the money that we're securing from them. I think the important thing for us is that we are a long-term secure business operating in within a regulated environment. So although the margins in terms of returns for investment tend to be quite low for our sector, there is the kind of classic issue that investment in the social housing sector is quite literally safe as houses because of the regulation and controls that exist within our sector. So we're a long-term business that are looking after long-term relationships and making sure that we deliver our social and our business objectives working in partnership with our investors.
There is occasionally the difficult view that, in actual fact, investors are filling a gap that perhaps the government should be filling. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think it's more of a partnership, certainly in the environment in Scotland. So we enjoy relatively high grant intervention rates in Scotland, which enable us to keep rents at a relatively modest level and enable us to offer these social rented houses on affordable rents in perpetuity. So the part of the deal for that is that we're able to bring our private borrowing requirements to the table to match that government investment and to get a bigger bang for the buck in terms of that borrowing being off the public sector balance sheet. I think the balance in our equation is we use our financial strength working with investors to provide that long-term funding, which provides match resources to the investment that the Scottish Government are putting into to our sector.
Where do you see the challenges coming after COVID, both in the immediate need of keeping people safe, but also in making sure that if there is a real extended need for social housing, you can be there to pick it up?
Yeah, and it's really important. Obviously, COVID's a massive issue for everyone, and people are really hurting both in the short term and the long term. So in the short term, it's about keeping people safe and making sure that they do have the knowledge that they've got that safe and secure home around them. In the longer term, we know that there is much greater demand for our services than we are currently able to provide. So if we're able to up our output using government support and using investor support as well, that's obviously a counter-cyclical measure in terms of recovering from the recession that we're undoubtedly in. It's about rebalancing the housing system to make it more sustainable so people don't feel pressured into insecure private rented accommodation or into marginal home ownership where people can really struggle with the responsibilities of home ownership. And of course, the other thing that's really important about our model is because we provide care and support as well as a roof over people's head, we are taking pressure off the health and social care system. And we've really seen over recent months about how difficult and how pressured that system can be in normal times, especially during the winter months. And the added pressure of the COVID pandemic is another reason why our support can help take pressure off that system through these difficult times.
So in the long term, looking ahead, how much do you think private investment is going to support all this need that you've just described?
I'd like to think it plays a really big part because I think we've demonstrated through my organisation and our fellow organisations within our sector that we're good funding partners, that we provide a good return, albeit modest, but a safe and a long-term return as part of a balanced portfolio. But also we deliver corporate social responsibility. We deliver real and measurable change and support for social objectives across the country. And as well-capitalized and well-governed organizations, we provide that investment partner that hopefully investors can really rely on through these challenging times.
So that's it for this episode. I'd like to thank all of our guests, and if you would like to listen to all the episodes in this series of Purposeful Investing and its precursor, the Purpose of Finance series, all packed with interviews and perspectives, do head to pensioncorporation.com. I'm Emma Nelson, and this has been an editorial intelligence production for Pensions Insurance Corporation. The executive producers are Jeremy Atfill of PIC and Julia Hobsbawm of Editorial Intelligence. Assistant producer is Callum McRae. Thank you for listening.